Chapter 57. Jessie lifted her head and gazed at Pitt. The coffee-brown eyes misted, teardrop up. He wrapped his knuckles against it, gauging the thickness. Then he moved back and lashed out with his foot at the center of the Indian Ocean. The hidden panel gave way, swung on its hinges, and smashed against the wall. "I'll be back," he said, and disappeared into a passageway. The interior was well-lit and carpeted. He rushed incautiously, the gun held out in front of him. The passage was air-conditioned and cool, but the sweat was flowing through his pores more heavily than ever before. He rubbed a sleeve over his forehead, blocking his view for a brief moment, and almost died. At that exact moment he reached a cross-passage, and like a scene from an old Mack Sennett silent movie, he collided with two guards who were walking around the corner. Pitt crashed through them, knocking them to the sides, then whirled and dropped to the floor. The advantage of surprise was on his side. The guards hadn't expected to meet a foe so close to General Velikov's study. Pitt did. The automatic in his hand spat four times before the startled guards had a chance to trigger their rifles. He leapt to his feet while they were still falling. For 2 seconds, perhaps three, it seemed an hour, he stared at the inert figures, curiously unaffected by their death, but stunned that it all happened so fast. Mentally and emotionally, he was exhausted. Physically, he felt reasonably fit. He sucked in deep lungfuls of air until his mind struggled through the haze, and he turned it to figuring which passage ran toward the electronic center of the compound. The side passages had concrete floors, so he stuck with the one with the carpet and forged ahead. He had run only 50 feet when his brain cells finally came back online, and he cursed his sluggishness for not thinking to snatch one of the guard's rifles. He pulled out the clip of the automatic. It was empty. Only one shell remained in the chamber. He wrote off the mistake and kept going. It was then he saw a backwash of light ahead and heard voices. He slowed and ghosted up to a portal and peered out with the wariness of a mouse peeking from a knothole for a cat. 6 feet away was a railing on a balcony overlooking a vast room crammed with banks of computers and consoles stretched in neat rows beneath two large data display screens. At least 10 technicians and engineers sat and calmly monitored the array of electronics, while another 5 or 6 stood in agitated conversation. The few uniformed guards who were present were crouched at one end of the room, their rifles aimed at a heavy steel door. A barrage of gunfire was coming from the other side, and Pitt knew Quintana and his men were about to break through. Now he was really sorry he hadn't taken the guns from the dead guards. He was about to turn and run back for them when a thunderous roar engulfed the room, followed by a great shower of dust and debris as the shattered door twisted crazily and burst into jagged fragments. Before the cloud settled, the Cubans charged through the opening, guns blazing. The first 3 inside the room went down from the fire of the guards. Then the Russians seemed to melt away before the murderous onslaught. The din inside the concrete-walled room was deafening, but even so, above it all, Pitt could hear the screams of the wounded. Most of the technicians hid under their consoles. Those who resisted were unmercifully shot down. Pitt moved out across the balcony, keeping his back flattened against the wall. He saw 2 men standing about 30 feet away, staring in rapt horror at the carnage below. He recognized one of them as General Velikov and began edging closer, stalking his prey. He had only moved a short distance when Velikov pulled back from the balcony railing and turned. He looked at Pitt blankly for an instant, and his eyes widened in recognition, and then, incredibly, he smiled. The man seemed to have no nerves at all. Pitt raised the automatic and took deliberate aim. Velikov moved with the swiftness of a cat, jerking the other man in front of him, a fraction of a second before the hammer fell on the cartridge. The bullet caught Lev Maisky in the chest. The deputy chief of the KGB stiffened in shock and stood there staring in petrified astonishment before staggering backward and tumbling over the railing to the floor below. Pitt unconsciously pulled the trigger again, but the gun was empty. In a futile gesture, he threw it at Velikov, who easily deflected it with an arm. Velikov nodded, his face revealing more curiosity than fear. You're an amazing man, Mr. Pitt. Before Pitt could reply or take a step, the general lurched sideways through an open door and slammed it shut. Pitt threw himself against the door, but he was too late. The lock was on the inside, and Velikov had snapped the latch. There would be no kicking this one in. The heavy bolt was firmly embedded in a metal frame. He raised his fist to punch the door, thought better of it, swung around and ran down a stairway to the floor below. He crossed the room through the confusion, stepping over the bodies until he reached Quintana, who was emptying the magazine of his AK-74 into a bank of computers. "Forget that!" Pitt shouted in Quintana's ear. He gestured to the radio console. "If your men haven't destroyed the antenna, let me try to make contact with the shuttle." Quintana lowered his rifle and looked at him. "The controls are in Russian. Can you operate it?" "Never know till I try," said Pitt. He sat at the radio console and quickly studied the confusing sea of lights and switches labeled in the Cyrillic alphabet. Quintana leaned over Pitt's shoulder. "You'll never find the right frequency in time." "You Catholic?"
"Yes, why?"
"Then call up the saint who guides lost souls and pray this thing is already set on the shuttle's frequency." Pitt placed the tiny headset over one ear and kept pressing switches until he received a tone. Then he adjusted the microphone and pressed what he guessed and fervently hoped was the transmit switch. "Hello, Gettysburg. Do you read me? Over." Then he pushed what he was sure was the receive switch. Nothing. He tried a second and a third. "Gettysburg, do you read? Over." He pushed a fourth switch. "Gettysburg. Gettysburg, please respond," Pitt implored. "Do you read me? Over." Silence, and then, "This is Gettysburg. Who the hell are you? Over." The sudden reply, so clear and distinct, surprised Pitt, and he took nearly 3 seconds to answer. "Not that it matters. The name is Dirk Pitt. For the love of God, Gettysburg, sheer off. I repeat, sheer off. You are on a glide path for Cuba."
"So what else is new?" said Juergens.
"I can only keep this bird in the air a few more minutes and must make a touchdown attempt at the nearest landing strip. We've run out of options." Pitt did not reply immediately. He closed his eyes and tried to think. Suddenly, something clicked in his mind. "Gettysburg, can you possibly make Miami?"
"Negative. Over."
"Try for the Key West Naval Air Station. It lies at the tip of the Keys."
"We copy. Our computers show it 110 miles north and slightly east of us. Very doubtful. Over."
"Better to pile it up in the water than hand it to the Russians."
"That's easy for you to say. We've got over a dozen people on board. Over."
Pitt wrestled with his conscience for a moment, struggling whether or not to play God. Then he said urgently, "Gettysburg, go for it. Go for the Keys." He couldn't have known it, but Juergens was about to make the same decision.
"Why not? What have we got to lose but a billion-dollar airplane and our lives? Keep your fingers crossed."
"When I go off the air, you should be able to re-establish communications with Houston," said Pitt.
"Good luck, Gettysburg. Come home safe. Out."
Pitt sat there, drained. There was a strange silence in the devastated room, a silence only intensified by the low moans of the wounded. He looked up at Quintana and smiled thinly. His part in the act was over, he thought vaguely. All that was left was to gather up his friends and return home. But then his mind recalled the La Dorada.